Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. My research subjects for today, Amanda Waltz.
Hello, Brian.
And Danny King.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going great.
Good.
It's fantastic. It's Saturday night. We're actually recording this one a little bit early. Making up for all those times that we just kind of did it at the last minute. So hopefully everyone's excited to be getting this either on time or early, depending on when we actually post it. usual spiel going into this. I'd like to remind everyone that you can... Are you done coughing?
Sorry.
I'd like to remind everyone that you can comment on the pages that these podcasts are posted on thefilmstage.com. And you can find us by clicking on features and then podcasts. You can also find us on iTunes, where we, as always, love to get star ratings and comments. You can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com, and you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/filmstageshow. Speaking of Twitter, we got a lot of Twitter action out of our Clouds of Sils Maria podcast.
Oh my god.
What was that? What?
Sils Maria was a big deal.
Sils Maria is a huge deal.
I said Sils Marina. I did. I said Sils Marina.
It's okay.
I pulled a Brian.
At least you didn't put a definite article in front of it. I guess that segues nicely into a comment that we got on the page that the show is posted on, again, at thefilmstage.com. Mauricio says, kind of hilarious when Brian puts the definite article in Clouds of Sils Maria. Is promptly corrected by everyone, and then 10 minutes later... calls the play within the film the Maloya snake. I am glad that you caught that, because I honestly thought that there was a definite article there. And then he also said that this week's podcast is particularly amazing. I'm glad you thought so. I did too. Can the podcast be all four of you folks every week? Again, we are going to hopefully have Nick Newman back once he's done with his scholarly pursuits. He's at the tail end of a film studies degree, if you couldn't have guessed that from listening to him talk. So we are hopefully... Why is that so funny, Amanda?
Nothing.
No
reason.
No reason at all. He'll hopefully be back, and we'll let you know when that happens. Going back to Twitter, a lot of people on Twitter... I'm going to once again say that this is what I'm starting to call the Rover effect, because I posted a personal review on my site, dearfilm.net, for the Rover, and it was one of the biggest traffic reviews that I'd ever put up, and I couldn't figure out why, until I realized that all the people who were retweeting it and tweeting about it all had pictures of Robert Pattinson or Kristen Stewart as their Twitter avatar. So... And it's the same thing with Clouds of Sils Maria podcasts for the Film Stage show. A lot of, you know, K-Stew fans and our Pats lovers. And I'm going to say that people who gave a lot of shit to the Twilight series, I never saw the films, obviously. I've made my fair share of fun about them. But as we always say, anyone who has an inroad into the cinema... and then follows a particular person from what might be considered a very shitty franchise into good movies, that's still a good thing. So we should never really look down on things like that. Because how many of these people, if, you know, any other random star had been in this movie, would have actually gone out and seen it? Probably not a lot. So Twilight hate all you want about regressive gender politics or bad filmmaking or really terrible writing. Again, I haven't seen it. I'm just kind of pulling that out of the air of what I've heard. But if it's getting people to see movies like The Rover and Clouds of Sils Maria, I'm totally okay with that. What are the numbers?
You should also watch the Twilight movies, Brian.
Obviously.
They're pretty amazing.
I will. I mean, we got 81 retweets and 71 favorites. That's kind of crazy for the Clouds of Sils... The Clouds of... Damn it! That one's for you. That one is for you, Mauricio.
You did not do that on purpose.
I didn't do that on purpose. Anyway, LWS in SA on Twitter said, "Oh, Juliette Binoche looked like Tina Fey," and yes, yeah. Yes, she did. So thank you. In a word, nah. That's a great Twitter name. Film Stage Show. Great listen. Clapping emoji. Thanks. You are very welcome. In a word, nah. Also, that's a great Twitter name. I'll say that again. I think that's pretty much the bulk of the actual responses we got. Otherwise, a lot of retweets. People just talking about the film in general. So, yeah, we're out there, people, and we're listening to you. So never hesitate to tell us what you think. Also, mark my words, responding to my joke about pretentious movie titles, said, "My Life, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn." I have to say that's pretty pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll agree with you there. That's that. No discussion topic for today. We probably could have done something about Alex Garland. Sci-fi movies, no. Restricted casts, single locations. There were a lot of options, but we didn't deem it worthy to explore any of them, apparently. So we're just going to be talking today about the movie Ex Machina, which was written and directed by Alex Garland, who, as you may know, wrote 28 Days Later and Sunshine. And it stars Alicia Vikander, she of Anna Karenina fame, also Donald Gleason, also from Anna Karenina, and he will also be playing in the Star Wars film that's coming out later this year, alongside Oscar Isaac, who also stars in this film. He was also in Inside Llewyn Davis, playing Llewyn Davis. So here's the trailer.
You are dead center of the greatest scientific event in the history of man.
Hello.
Hi. Do you have a name?
Ava.
Answer me this. How do you feel about her?
Her AI is beyond doubt.
No, nothing analytical. Just, how do you feel?
I feel that she's amazing.
Good.
Do you want to be my friend?
Of course.
Will it be possible?
Why would it not be?
Did you know that Nathan brought me here to test you?
Caleb. You're wrong.
Wrong about what?
Nathan. You shouldn't trust anything he says.
Does Ava actually like you, or is she just pretending to like you? Self-awareness, manipulation, sexuality.
Are you attracted to me?
Now, if that isn't true AI, what is?
Ex Machina is the story of a young programmer who is played by Domhnall Gleeson, that is Caleb, and Caleb wins a contest at his company to spend a week with their enigmatic isolationist CEO Nathan, who's played by Oscar Isaac. Oscar Isaac, when Caleb arrives, lets Caleb know that this is not just going to be a little bro-y hangout, and that he is in fact there to test his company's newest creation, an artificial intelligence embodied by Ava, who is played by Alicia Vikander. I really hope I'm saying that correctly.
The Alicia Vikander?
Is it? It's probably, yeah, the Alicia Vikander. I mean, there's probably a lot of Alicia Vikanders out there, and this is the one that we're referring to. So anyway, the Ex Machina. Let's get into this. Danny King, let's start with you. What did you think of Ex Machina?
I mostly liked this movie. I saw it a couple weeks ago when it first came out in New York.
Well, so la-di-da.
Yeah, very exclusive access to an AMC theater. And yeah, I like the film. I like that the first minute or two where Caleb wins this contest is presented very obliquely through like just a brief like montage of images that don't really have much sound. And so like 98% of the movie is set at this retreat of Nathan, who runs this search engine company. So I like the overall structure of it as just this kind of contained three-person chamber piece. I think I mostly loved Oscar Isaac's performance. Certainly physically, it's like I love the character. He's got this really intense beard. He's shaved head. He seems to have bulked up for the role.
I love that Oscar Isaac bulked up to play basically the founder of Google.
Right, right. So, like, yeah. So what's interesting for me is that, like, this is a movie that has, you know, very thorough and interesting ideas about artificial intelligence and the future of, you know, humanity and machines and blah. When really the idea that I most like in the movie is this vision of a sort of 21st century nerd turned, like, deranged frat bro.
Yes.
I think that psychology is just really fascinating. And one of the things that I like about Isaac is that he sort of clues you in right away that his character has kind of gone off the deep end. He doesn't really make an attempt to hide it. Not only is he, like, really hungover when Caleb meets him.
How many times have I had the same conversation that they have had?
Right, right.
It's like, I'm really hungover. Oh, was the party good? Party? Well, yeah, you said you were hungover. Yeah? Okay, never mind. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Yeah.
Oh, man. By the way, guys, I'm really hungover.
But there's this really hilarious moment where he, so he's just been working out a little bit. So he, Isaac's character is, like, sweaty, and he's showing Caleb
his... again, but slower.
Me?
Yeah.
No. I thought that was a technical thing.
Nope.
So this character, he's, like, drenched in sweat, and he's showing Caleb his room. And then in the middle of their conversation, he just, like, lays down on the bed.
Right?
And it's, like, and it's, Caleb doesn't even seem to have, like, a reaction to it, but it's this really funny moment where this guy is just very strange. And so, yeah, that, I think the thing I like most was the idea of this, of just sort of, like, instant wealth driving this guy to madness. I also like Alicia Vikander's performance. I read that she was earlier, like, studied ballet, and there's something really, like, dance-like about how she moves with the character. I mean, it's interesting because, like, half of her body is some kind of CGI work, but there's, like, a very distinct physicality that she gives when she's walking around. And I think the ending, without getting into spoilers, is a bit too, like, reliant on narrative reversals and, like, gotcha moments. And that kind of took me out of it. So I think I like maybe the third act of this movie. I like the ideas of it more in theory than in how it's actually executed. But overall, I think it was it's a good movie and a pretty strong directorial debut.
All right. Amanda Waltz, what do you think?
I actually had the opposite feeling about the ending, because this is one of the few movies where I realized that the ending was going to determine how I felt about it. Because there were definitely moments where I got a little impatient with it. It's definitely a film built in anxiety and setup and making you question what's, you know, it's not necessarily predictable. You know, but you know something terrible is going to happen. So... and
yeah, it begins almost instantaneously. There's just a sense of dread in the air.
Yeah, and it is, you know, and it's just this very insular environment where you're in this basically Frank Lloyd Wright house where it almost feels like the Frank Lloyd Wright mansion, which is an actual mansion that you can go and visit.
Is that like the Falling Water House or?
It's not an actual, I don't know where it is. I saw an article about it, and I never actually got around to reading it, but it is an actual place, but it definitely has that right constructing itself around nature feel about it.
Right.
And, but yet I'm guessing the bottom half is the like he says, it's the laboratory, and it feels like they're inside of an iPad, basically. The design is very streamlined. It's very sterile. And what's interesting, though, is because when you were talking about Oscar Isaacs just being a big, sweaty frat bro the entire time, is that while he is sweaty and just like disheveled all the time, he's in this very controlled environment that's just like very clean and very sterile. And actually, I think it's interesting. I feel like the message of this film is a bro genius is still a bro. Because, and it's one of the things I really find researching Alex Garland, he has a really impressive pedigree and his background, just the fact that his writing background and this being his directorial debut is really impressive, because I really did enjoy the movie as a whole. And I think I read this this essay that he wrote for the New York Times about why, I think he said something like how he was sort of dismayed to find that when he wrote this movie, a whole bunch of other AI movies were coming out at the same time, like Her and what was the one with Johnny Depp?
Oh, Transcendence.
Like Transcendence.
Oh,
and all
man. Disaster,
yeah.
That movie.
Oh, I didn't bother. But, and he was very dismayed to find, because he thought, oh, you know, I'm, you know, on the cutting edge with this. And so I think the essay was more about, like, it was very thoughtful, him just talking about like how we're relating to artificial intelligence. And he said that there's a lot of artificial intelligent anxiety, not just from, you know, like not just from filmmakers, but from figures like Stephen Hawking made a statement, and other people, Steve Wozniak, which actually Steve Wozniak making a statement about artificial intelligence is kind of like, like being weird about it. I think he said something like, it's going to destroy us.
Yeah, that seems to be everything. Like, everyone says that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's going to be the last invention we ever make.
Yeah. Like, they're going to rise up and destroy us. Which, well, he actually mentioned Age of Ultron, which Age of Ultron is actually, oh, this is, like, all of our fears come to light because these robots actually do destroy us. But his thing was this AI anxiety in part a projected fear of something else? And he says that these machines that, I mean, basically it's like we already interact with artificial intelligence every day. So just through smartphones and through everything. And he says that they don't really have an agenda. We have the agenda. And so he's not worried so much about like the technology as like the human component. And I really think that this film like reflects that in a really, like, even if you don't think that is the most brilliant way, I think it is incredibly thoughtful and not like, I think it does give like an interesting view of it and how like we're influencing this technology. And Oscar Isaac's character Nathan obviously has an agenda for this artificial intelligence that he's creating, but to what end? Is it for his own means? Is it for the benefit of mankind? Because it really doesn't seem like it is. It seems like he's basically just, I don't know, kind of amusing himself. Like he's doing it just because he can. I think he even says that in the film. He says, "We, you know, why not? Why don't we can do it?" And so, you know, I think that the film was like approached it from a very intelligent perspective. Also, the design is amazing. I think the design in this film is amazing. And what you were saying about Alicia Vikander,
mm-hmm.
I mean, because her body for the most part is CG. But actually, the funny thing was I was reading this interview with him and he said that her hands and feet are her real hands and feet, and they asked him why they chose to do that, and he's like, have you ever tried to create a CG hand? It's a nightmare. So it's like very pragmatic reason. Yeah. But so she's CG, so it's like she has to bring life to this role, and her movements are so deliberate and fluid and I just think it like brings an otherworldliness, like you said, like that physicality brings sort of like this unknown element to her character. And you know, Isaac is, I love him so much.
I have loved him ever since Sucker Punch, and I did not like Sucker Punch.
Really? He was in Sucker Punch?
Yeah, he was Blue.
Oh, you act as if I've seen this movie.
Oh, well, I thought maybe you fucking had. Jesus, I don't know.
No, I'm just joking.
You said it as though you had seen it and just didn't recognize him.
I am aware of it, and I know John Hamm was in it, which is so weird.
Well, that's weird, because he was in it for like 14 seconds, and Oscar Isaac was the primary protagonist. Antagonist. Wow. Do not want to call him the protagonist of that movie.
Is he just like a humongous like rapist?
Yeah, pretty like, much.
I only know about the movie because I think it was like Nathan Raven wrote something about it and I read it. But yeah, it's so bad. But yeah, it's...
You didn't listen to the How Did This Get Made about it?
No. Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I did listen to it. But it's incoherent because if you haven't watched the movie, it's just like, what are they talking about? This sounds like a complete nightmare.
This is true.
But yeah, and Isaac is amazing. And I think he has this sort of, I don't know if he's from New York, but he has this sort of like New York boy quality about him where it's just so like, he's like laid back and kind of tough and kind of like, you just kind of want to, I don't know. I just really love his charm.
That please go on. Tell us what you kind of want to.
I did. I did like the fact that he was shirtless for a lot of this movie. I'm going to get real superficial.
Did you like his dance scene?
Oh, my God.
The best line in the movie.
Kiss me on my face, Oscar Isaac. Ridiculous.
And wait, what was the line?
Well, no, we'll talk about it in spoilers.
Okay.
It's amazing. I literally clapped.
And I'd seen it. I watched the clip before I saw the movie, and when it came up again, I was still just as excited.
I only saw the GIF, so I had like no context whatsoever. And I was just like, this is amazing. I'm really happy that I'm here right now.
So out of nowhere. So not expecting it. Anyway, but yeah, it is, but like I said, I think I got a little impatient with the film in parts just because one of the things they did in the film that was, I kind of was like, okay, I get it, was they kept bringing up the whole reason, like all of the sort of cliche arguments against creating AI technology, you know, like he says that thing that I am the destroyer of worlds.
Death, the destroyer of worlds.
Yeah, the Oppenheimer, and he says it, and he's like, "It's Oppenheimer," and Isaac's like, "Yeah, I know, it's like Oppenheimer," and he keeps like pulling out these quotes, and it's just, I think it's kind of calling attention to that, like, yeah, we know the arguments, we understand, we don't care, like we're over it. But, and I thought, you know, that, I think some of that got a little tiresome, but like, spoilers, I think we can expand on it a little bit more. But anyway, Brian, what did you think of the movie?
What did I think of the movie? I actually really, what was that?
I already know.
Yes. Oh, wait, can I just bring up one more thing before we start? I think this film would go really well in a double feature with Stepford Wives. Okay, anyway.
Okay.
That's all.
I'm down with that. So what did I think of this movie? I really loved it. I loved it quite a bit. I'm a fan of Alex Garland. I loved Sunshine. I know that that's not a popular opinion. I like 28 Days Later. I enjoyed the book, The Beach. I also enjoyed his book, Coma.
I do say the book, not the movie.
Yeah, definitely not the movie. he's done a lot of other good stuff, too. I think he did the adaptation of Never Let Me Go, a book that I did not like that much, but a movie that I found to be quite good. And I enjoyed the hell out of this. I thought that it was great, first of all, to get to see my man Domhnall Gleeson. Domhnall Gleeson actually had worked with Alex Garland on the movie Dread, which Garland wrote. Did any of you see Dread?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, guys, Dread was amazing.
I heard it was no fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, that's...
clear disagreement.
Yeah.
Really?
That's a fun movie. Right. That movie's fun as shit. It's funny that Garland apparently was upset about all the AI movies coming out, because Dredd is a lot like the movie The Raid.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah. In so far as you have, like, a police officer stuck in a building full of people who want to kill him. And I remember him saying during an interview there, like, we saw that first trailer for The Raid and we were like, oh, no. But yeah, so, you know, Garland is very prescient about all the different types of themes and ideas and trends that are going to be happening in cinema when he decides to write a movie, apparently. as for this movie, I loved it. Domhnall Gleeson is a great actor, and he was great in this. He brought a lot to the role that otherwise could have just been very much just your average kind of like, oh my God, what's going on? And then he brought depth to a character that could have been played very poorly. Oscar Isaac, I mean, my God. What
a master.
What can we say about him that was not already said by Amanda? He is... flat out wonderful in this, and his hyper aggressive, like, really like John Hammond's angry young son, basically. Like, if you imagine John Hammond from Jurassic Park, who's just like, yeah, I know what this is, I know how it's done, but now how do I market it? Like, how do I put it out there? And I love the fact that when Caleb and Nathan are first talking about Caleb's first interaction with Ava, Caleb just keeps talking about, like, the linguistics of the machine, and then he's giving all these, like, very thoughtful, you know, answers and scientifically based answers to questions, and then Nathan's like, dude, just stop fucking talking like a program and just tell me what you thought. And Caleb says something like, she's fucking awesome or fucking amazing, and Nathan's like, yeah, that's what I'm looking for, because he doesn't give a shit about the fact that he's done something technologically amazing. He just wants to wow people and wants to, like, live in the human experience that other people are going to have when they first learn about this thing. Which says a lot about his character, as we will find out through the course of the movie. Ava, as played by Alicia Vikander, is a marvel of both, like, technological, you know, CGI innovation, but also really strong characterization. And I just got to say that, like, this movie is really good at addressing concerns that the audience has as they come up. Like, there were so many times when I would have a question and then someone else would ask the same question. And I would be like, okay, thank God that someone's going to address that. Because it's like, why, like, a Turing test, like, I'm not supposed to know that it's a machine. And Oscar Isaac's like, yeah, well, fuck that. I want to be even better than the Turing test. Like, why did you have to make her an extremely attractive woman? And it's just like, because also, why did you have to give her sexuality and the ability to, like, want people? And he's like, because that's what goes into us. And I was like, yes, for God's sakes, yes, that's such a good answer. Like, the way that this movie taps into not just, because a lot of movies talk about artificial intelligence, and then they give the computers, like, an emotional component, which is bullshit. Like, the most convincing pure artificial intelligence in a movie that I've seen is HAL from 2001. Shocker. But that's because HAL didn't have any emotions. HAL didn't give HAL a shit. That's the problem with HAL, if you've seen that movie. He's not being a murderous asshole. He's being a programmed machine that knows the best way to complete the mission. And that just so happens to not involve a lot of the people that are involved. And in this movie, it's really, like, bridging the gap. Like, yeah, we have artificial intelligence. I can talk to Siri and she can give me an answer. But that's barely what I'm looking for. And it is a simulation. Because in order to have true artificial intelligence as we think of ourselves as being intelligent, you need to have all those human components. And so I like that they make that argument for it. Because, yeah, at first it just seems like, oh, of course, like, the super intelligent computer program that we have here is wrapped up in the body of a sexy young woman. But yeah, he makes a good point. Like, a gray box that has an artificial intelligence has no reason to talk to any other gray box or any person. It wants for nothing. It desires nothing. It gets nothing out of anything. So giving it hopes and dreams and a sex drive and even the ability to have sex with it, as he explains to us at one point in one of the weirdest scenes, is an interesting component, and it really makes sense in the course of the film. So answering questions like that, and even thinking to bring them up, and then having them be integral to the plot itself and the themes that are involved is really great. And I love the way that this movie does take that a step further to say, like, artificial intelligence and humanity are very different things. And so humanity can either be a good thing or a bad thing. And artificial intelligence itself, and any kind of intelligence really, without a counterbalance of humanity, is not a great thing at all. Oscar Isaac has a lot of intelligence, but his humanity appears to have been sweated out of him. And Caleb has a lot of intelligence, but he allows his humanity to... What did you just say?
I said literally, yeah.
And then Ava, you know, we have Ava. And sure, she's an artificial intelligence, but does she have humanity? Is that in there? And if it is it good or bad? And getting to feel that and see that was really quite wonderful.
Well, and I think that brings up two points, because she is a product of Oscar Isaac. And I think she's, I think in that it's problematic because she hates him and very obviously hates him. And he's very obviously a self-hating individual.
Yeah.
So
you don't, I can tell you from experience, you do not drink that much alone if you're really happy with yourself.
Oh, Brian.
What?
Oh, man.
But also, in terms of giving her a sexuality, I think the sexual politics in this film are really, really getting into some deep, dark territory. And
oh, yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
idea, well, yeah, because
certainly dark. Certainly
he doesn't.
Dark character.
He, I mean, we can just say this: Oscar Isaac can make anything he wants. He makes a hot young woman.
Well, and I think in that too, it's like if all of the, and this is something that I definitely, you know, it's like a theoretical question. Okay, so if let's knowing like how tech is male dominated, would all AIs just be straight women? Like, yeah.
Well, no, you got to have some
attractive straight women.
No, you got to have some that are bisexual so you can have a threesome.
Oh, yeah, of course.
God, come on. Get with it. Let's
so
just be real here.
That definitely brings into the whole, like I said before, the whole machines are neutral and they're sort of manifestations of our own kind of like wants and needs and desires. And
yeah.
Oh, boy, this movie.
This movie's great. I love this movie.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. And all joking aside, I mean, it would have been interesting if they had made it a man, and maybe had Caleb be a woman. But then, as I think we can express in spoilers, maybe that would have gotten into like actually sexist territory instead of just examining inherent sexism.
Mm.
It's always difficult in a movie to portray sexism. Especially like with the tech industry, and especially when it's, you know, based around physicality, mainly because it's really difficult for a movie to walk the line of doing it and like doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, I think, lands firmly on the right side of that line.
As a woman, I also believe that.
I'm so glad we have a woman on this podcast now so that you can speak for the entirety of your gender, because usually we just had to wing it and hope for the best.
Oh my goodness.
God, if you were gay, it would be like a double threat. We could
Hey guys, all
too.
The women got together, we had a meeting, and they sent me here.
Yeah, Amanda, you went to your weekly women's meeting, right?
I did. We all got together and okay. They were like, Amanda, we're cool with this. And I was like, okay, I'll go tell the men. Oh my God. Anyway.
Indeed. So yeah, I really love this movie. And there's a lot more to talk about in spoilers. Anything to say about this before we get into spoilers that we'd like people who maybe are still on the fence to hear?
A couple, these are like two random things, but for Oscar Isaac fans, I saw this film at the Tribeca Film Festival called Mojave.
Okay.
I feel like Brian, I thought it was like a really uneven movie, but it might be up your alley because it's it's gotten some Cormac McCarthy comparisons.
Oh, I'm in. Yeah.
Okay.
But so it's directed by like William Monahan, who wrote like The Departed. And so Garrett Hedlund plays some famous Hollywood actor or director who decides to just go wander into the Mojave Desert to like find himself. And he comes across a drifter played by Oscar Isaac.
Yes.
And so Oscar Isaac shows up at his fire one night and he's got like a gold tooth, like long hair. And he always says brother. So he's like, hey brother. Like, he's like have some coffee, brother. And his character, like, Nathan is always like spouting references. So when his first scene, he says something like, I like motivated chaos or something like that. And then he like calls himself a Shakespeare man. But anyway, it's just like another equally deranged performance. And the fact that he's saying brother in every sentence, like he really commits to that. And it's pretty hilarious. And then the other thing I would say about Ex Machina, is that the physicality is most obvious with Isaac and Vikander, but there's also something about Gleason that's interesting. And Manola Dargis has this really amazing line in her piece on the film where she calls Caleb's body an entire Instagram feed of male surrender. And so, wonderful. Yeah, and then she also talks about, like, his slender, bobbing throat. And, like, when I read that line, I remember that, like, during his scenes, I was always, like, looking at his Adam's apple for some reason. Like, there's something about the close-ups on him and, like, I don't know, that just struck me. And she also writes that, this is a really good line, his slender bobbing throat stretched across the screen as if offering itself to a knife.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is like
Manola Dargis.
She should write some crime fiction.
It gets pretty dark here.
Some fucking noir work.
Yeah.
I will say Gleason has a he brings the IT guy physique.
Right.
Yeah, but at the same time he's not like a socially inept asshole. Like he's a normal guy. Yeah.
What are you trying to say about IT guys, Brian?
I'm just saying it's nice to have a movie that does get away from that view of IT guys. Like I love Silicon Valley, but you know, every once in a while that hedges really close to being like a nerd minstrel show.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean it's a goddamn nuanced depiction of the industry compared to like Big Bang Theory.
I was just about to say, is it anything like a nerd catch all like Big Bang Theory?
No. Like they actually like, you know, one of the guys isn't great with women, but it's more like it's not just because he's really smart. It's just that he kind of sucks with women. And then one of them is a complete and utter asshole, like really alpha male kind of guy. And one of them is a Satanist, and that's weird. But that's enough about Silicon Valley airing on HBO's Sunday after Game of Thrones. This podcast brought to you by Silicon Valley. I just like that this film, and it doesn't go way out of its way, because as we can all agree, Donald Gleason, if you walked into an IT department and saw him, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
But, you know, it's just nice that they actually gave them some layers. I think that's good enough. I think we can now talk about spoilers. So everyone out there, this movie just went wide this weekend. So get the fuck out there and watch it, because it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Take that. Talking about alpha male right now. Anyway. Spoilers for Ex Machina. One of the things that I loved in this movie is that you start to wonder yourself, oh, maybe Caleb is an AI.
Yeah.
And he's the one being tested to see if he even can figure it out or blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, I wonder if that's going to become a thing. I hope to God that it's not one of those things like the ending of Inception, where people just argue about it all the goddamn time.
Mm.
Luckily, we don't have to worry about that, because Caleb himself begins to wonder about that and slices open his arm to see if he's got any wiring in him, which is a tough scene to watch, but
brutal shit, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that. It's another one of those things where it's like, okay, this guy obviously is thinking the same thing I'm thinking. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. But now, hey, we know he's real. So we don't have to worry about that. We do have to find out. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm going to say he very defiantly rubs his own blood on the mirror and then punches it, which, yeah.
Like a fucking man. That's his, like, his fuck you to Nathan.
Oh,
who
yeah.
We first see working a heavy bag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
you need a minute there.
No, I'm good.
Or smiling beneath his large bushy beard, slowly unwrapping the tape from his hands. Grabbing a mineral water. Anyway.
Mm.
And I also like the fact that there is a woman in this film. I cannot remember her name. Kyoko?
Kyoko, yeah.
Who, oh, man.
I believe it's not a surprise to find out that she is a robot.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, there's the reveal of it, but I don't feel like anyone in the theater was like, holy shit, what? Like, it was just kind of very obvious that she was, especially when flipping on some music immediately enters her into dance mode.
Mm-hmm.
And well, this, and yeah, what was the line? You got to tell me. I forgot.
You're so excited about this line. So there's a moment.
Just watch this movie, Danny.
You guys, I fell asleep.
He only watched the trailer. We're not going to tell anyone that. We don't want to lose our authority as a podcast. So Caleb can see into Ava's chamber because she is not allowed to roam around. She has like a small studio apartment that she lives in. And he's basically in like a shark cage to speak to her. And so he can watch a video feed, and he's watching it as Oscar Isaac's Nathan walks into the room and sees that she's drawing something because she wants to draw things. And he tears up the picture and throws it down. And when Caleb asks him about this, Oscar Isaac is already drunk. And he's hanging out with his hot Asian sex bot. And Caleb says,
"You tore up her picture."
And then Oscar Isaac says,
"I'm going to tear up the fucking dance floor, dude. Check it out."
And I was just like, you're goddamn right you are, Oscar Isaac.
Wow. That choreographed dance number. Because.
Beautiful.
The movie suggests that. He was the one who choreographed it, and yeah. So...
He's like, look, I know exactly how I'm going to want to dance during this song, so I'm going to make this woman know how to dance.
I'm going to program this woman to do this choreographed dance number.
It was so amazing.
Oh, so ridiculous.
So amazing. But yeah, I just love that, because it's just like the most douchey bro thing to say, and he says it. And he sells the shit out of it.
You kind of love him for.
Oh yeah, he says that, it. And I'm like, oh. You know what, man, own it.
Dance with me, Oscar.
Yeah, but there's also certainly some moral issues there with his character, psychological.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's basically programmed consent out of this.
Brian, let's just confirm that this character is very disturbed. So we
let's just yeah, we can we get that? Out of Are we clear on that,
Brian?
Yeah.
He's crazy.
He's crazy, but lovably so. A little bit.
Brian, it was very funny to watch him dance, but he is a psycho. Yes, correct.
I agree.
Brian, what genre do you think this movie is?
Romantic comedy. Speaking of romantic, Caleb does in fact begin to have feelings for Ava. And who wouldn't? She's beautiful. She's thoughtful. She's intelligent. She drew a picture of Caleb that Nathan then destroyed. But she tearfully shows him it. And so when she asks if she will be destroyed if the test is a failure, Caleb realizes that Nathan is not a good man.
Well, can we we should probably bring up the fact that there are frequent power outages.
Oh yeah.
And that plays into the end of the plot.
Right.
That she's, you find out she's the one causing them.
Right. And the best part about that is that when the power goes out, all of the doors lock automatically.
Yes.
Which is not a good thing. It freaks Caleb out. And we do find out that she is reversing the flow on her induction charging pads to short out everything and make the power go down. And so that this will grant them time to speak when the cameras are off. Little do we know, when they have their final conversation during one of these blackouts, that Nathan has planted a battery-operated camera so he knows what they're talking about. So Caleb gets Nathan wasted at some point and goes and looks through his files and finds the video footage of all of the other AIs that have been created. And needless to say, what he sees is not a very happy picture.
It's very chilling.
It is disturbing. I still can't stop thinking about watching that one robot woman pounding at the door so intensely that her arms fall apart.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So Nathan is not a great guy. Can we
Jesus.
Agree? Danny, can we agree with that?
Yeah, I have to, based on that evidence. Yeah.
Yeah, it's disturbing. It's chilling. It's shocking. I loved it. So Caleb says, I'll help you get out, because this Nathan guy is a real bad character. Nathan thinks that he's pretty smart and that he's out fooled them, basically, because Caleb's plan was to get him drunk and then rewire some systems so that when the power goes out, all the doors open. Little does Nathan know that that has already happened. And Nathan is not happy to hear about this, because Ava does it. And the doors open and she walks on out. And then her and Kyoko sort of just straight up murder him.
That murder scene.
So good.
So fantastic.
Because there's such an inevitability to it. And even better than that is that it happens so slowly.
Because I thought that when they revealed all of the AIs in those weird little mirrored closets,
yeah,
I thought what was going to happen was all of the AIs were going to come out and just straight up massacre Oscar Isaac, Nathan. But
no, not what happened. Kyoko stabs him in the back.
Which I think is, I preferred that. I'm glad that my my vision of it didn't come true.
I'm pretty happy about that as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kyoko stabs him in the back. He destroys her. And these things are not powerful. Like, they're basically just human strength.
Well, do you really think he would make a robot or a lady robot that was more powerful than himself?
That's a good point. I mean, but in most movies, it's like, oh, she's made out of like a space-age titanium. Why would you do that? That's a terrible idea. So the fact that she appears to be like a wire armature is a lot better.
Yeah.
Just to, again, smart filmmaking. Way to go, Nathan. Mm-hmm. And then Ava stabs him again. And what does he say when he dies? I can't remember.
Oh, it's so funny. I wish I could remember. He's like, oh, this is a bummer.
Yeah, he was like, this is like, it's fucking weird or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just,
yeah,
like,
it might be this is weird or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
As he slumps to the ground and dies. And it's just like, yeah, dude, it is weird. You fucking created a woman. And the best part that we find out is that, you know, he tells Caleb, yeah, I've programmed her so that she can have feelings for people. Like, that's just what's going to happen. And then but he also makes a point of saying, you know, but, and as they say throughout the entire movie, is it just a simulation? Is it true? Or is it that she can, but she's lying about it? And as we find out, she's lying about it. Because things do not end well for Caleb either.
Girl!
I would go a step further and to say that things end so much worse for Caleb than they do for Oscar Isaac.
Oh, character. Man, that's a slow-ass death.
That's a terrible way to go.
Oh, man. Oof. And what I like about that, so she's basically, he's watching her through the glass as she's putting herself back together because he takes her arm off and she just goes to that one AI and she starts rebuilding, like she puts, and I kind of like that. I was watching her put skin on herself, and the way that they show how the skin comes on and off, because it's basically like almost like, I want to say Legos. It's sort of like,
yeah, it's like a weird magnetic, also,
but it has
like
these holes.
Yeah,
that they, and
it's,
I
like
liked
a honeycomb structure.
Yeah, like a honeycomb structure, and the way she's putting, and I realized I was watching, and as I was watching, because she's, I'm like, man, how does she know that this like skin and these arms and everything are going to be able to transfer onto her own body? And I was like, well, because they all have the same body type, they all look the same, because that's his like vision of like
it's
what
not
a
like
woman's
he
supposed
made
to look.
One that was like a little heavier, yeah, a little more full figured. It's like, nope, this is what I want.
It's like perky breast, tiny waist, petite. Yeah. Yeah, it's so like, and so she puts all that skin on.
I mean, duh, right?
Yeah, right? But then she even, like, even the dress that she takes off, she takes that dress off and it fits her perfectly, and the shoes fit her perfectly. It's such an interesting revelation. Like, oh my God, all these women just look the same. But yeah.
Yeah, you know, but it's, you know, let's give them some credit. One of them is Asian.
And one of them is black.
Yes.
Except she doesn't have a head, which...
Really disturbing.
Very disturbing.
Yeah.
Wow, this movie.
And she leaves him there to die, like we presume.
And he's watching her almost like... He's looking forward to like, ah, now I get to be with this woman. And she's like, nope, poop.
Yeah.
Door closes.
It's really, really sad, actually. I mean... I came into this movie knowing both of these actors, Domhnall Gleeson and Alicia Vikander, from Anna Karenina, where they play my favorite literary couple, Constantine Levin and Kitty Shcherbatsky. They play them, and like that's like a beautiful couple. Like he's really nice and kind, and she leaves him at some point. I guess spoilers for Anna Karenina, but and then comes back to him at the end after she's been screwed over. And, like, they actually realize what true love is, and they have a great, great relationship, unlike Anna Karenina, who jumps underneath a train. And so I was like, oh, it's almost like, I assume this is what it would feel like for people who watch Titanic to then go see Revolutionary Road.
Oh. Because
it's just like, oh, here's that couple that I love so much. Oh, fuck.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, it broke my heart when she left him there to die.
What does it say about me that I didn't break my heart?
But I mean, he didn't do anything, and he was going to help her, but she only saw him as a tool for her escape. And this is where I get into my little thing about the difference between intelligence and humanity.
But you have to think, if she is an extension of Oscar Isaac... Or of Nathan, Jesus. If she's an extension of Nathan, then that's sort of kind of makes her an opportunist just by nature. Because
I guess,
that's.
But she hates him. She should strive to be better than him. Like, he didn't program his personality into her.
Yeah, but I think she is. I think he does influence her personality.
Yeah, that's true.
So
he's just turned her into like a hardened, cold, like basically a femme fatale from a noir. And
girls just want to be free.
That's true. I mean, no
one
wants to have to be locked up in some creepy dude's house for a while. But it just sucked so much to watch that happen.
But it is like, but they have so many conversations in the movie where he's like, well, you just want her to be this. She's just being what she knows you want her to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, I think it says a lot about like how they're both objectifying her and how she doesn't really meet either of their expectations.
Right.
And I mean, it's
but
kind
he,
of like
he talked about like, oh, we can go on a date. And she was like, oh, like our date. And she made it like a point to like, say
which by the
date again,
which by the way, I think it's, I thought it was kind of interesting that he says, oh, did you, because he starts getting suspicious.
Are we talking about the face?
Well, just talking about how he starts, when Caleb starts to suspect that he created her for him.
Yeah.
And he says, did you base her look on my porn profile? And I was like, do women wear little flowery dresses in your porno?
I think that he was talking specifically about her face.
Oh, just her face?
Yeah.
Because she wears a lot of cutesy little flowery dresses and cardigans. She basically dresses like a school teacher, and I'm like, do you watch school teacher porn?
I mean, I'd watch a porn about a girl dressed like that. She looked like
that. Hey, Brian.
Goddamn right I would.
I guess it's not fair because I'm just going to objectify Oscar Isaac for the rest of my life. So.
I don't care what you dress Oscar Isaac in. In fact, don't dress him at all. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Unzip that hoodie by 75%. That's basically what he does the whole movie. I'm like, and it's a hoodie. Why is it unzipped so far? Anyway.
So yeah, that's, I was sad. I was sad. I'm still bummed out about it. Cause then I was thinking,
it's bittersweet.
Cause first of all, he almost had the door and then he's using his card key, but apparently it's just not going to work anymore. Cause he was in the private room where Oscar Isaac lived. So he wouldn't have had access to that.
Oh yeah.
And then I'm like, dude, just break the door. And this is, I guess, where the movie really twists the knife. Because if they had just left him there, you could think to yourself, oh, okay, well, he's going to get out at some point. But then they show him attempting to break the door with a chair, and the door is unyielding. It looks like it's just glass, but apparently it's super space-age glass that will not break. And then we cut back to him just sitting there in resignation. So there's a part of me that really wants to think that, you know, he'll get out somehow, but his card doesn't work the phones either.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it won't work the computers. And so I just have to assume that he sits there and starves to death.
Oh, my God.
How much food do you think is in that Frank Lloyd Wright laboratory?
I don't know. It seems as though he's trapped in the bedroom.
Oh,
so like
Jesus.
Maybe he has some water in the tap, but like I don't know. And it really bums me out, guys.
That is brutal.
It is fucking yeah, right.
Guys, this movie like makes me upset. I'm sad.
And yet, I'm still kind of like I'm glad she got away.
Yeah, no,
I'm glad she got away too. But I mean, he was nice to her in his own way. She could have at least like ditched him later.
Yeah, but I think the reason she left him there was because he knew she was an AI.
Yeah.
So she had to leave him there if she wanted to live as a normal human.
But what are her life choices now? She's never going to age. I mean,
it's going to be like what's that Adeline movie?
Oh, Age of Adeline. She has no documentation. She's got to charge herself. Like,
God, they need to make a sequel to this movie to show what?
I would watch that.
I would
watch a sequel to this movie. I'd love it to be like a gritty revenge thriller where Caleb somehow got out and was like hunting her. It would be a completely tonally different movie, but I loved these characters so much that I would still watch the shit out of that.
Oh my God, yeah.
He's like, oh, I got out of that room all right, but I didn't leave the house until I had like boxed on the heavy bag and used all of his weights, and now I'm the muscled one with a fucking intense beard.
He just becomes Bane, like, yeah. Ridiculously strong.
Exactly. But yeah, I loved this movie. I loved what it was saying. And it really, I mean, it's a testament to how much I like this movie that it breaks my heart that Levin was left by Kitty to die.
You gotta do what you gotta do, man.
I guess.
There's plenty of IT guys out there. Dime a dozen.
The poor guy watched his parents die in a car crash that he was in.
Oh, yeah.
And she's going to just leave him there? I mean, like, come on.
What do you think that backstory detail means?
Kind. I mean, well, that's the other thing. There's no one who's going to notice he's missing.
Oh, my God.
Like, they talk about it. Like, oh, you know, I picked you because, yeah, you're a pretty okay programmer, but also you have no parents. And you don't have a girlfriend, so I know that you're probably susceptible and needy. Because I guess we sort of skipped this over, but the actual test of AI was going to be whether or not she was able to utilize him to escape.
Yeah, that's right.
And so he has no girlfriend, he has no parents, no siblings. Well, he's just a guy alone in the world. And I assume
the company notice that they're both gone, though?
I don't know. I really don't. That's my only hope, is that at some point someone in the company would be like, hey, what the hell? Or, but maybe they're just so big that they're like, I don't know, just get a new one, I guess.
Like the VP's, like he hasn't been in any board meetings. He hasn't Skyped in.
It doesn't really seem like he does most of that anyway.
Probably.
You don't see him do any work with the company the entire time he's there.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think he's just like on a permanent holiday now.
Probably.
Well, singing with the angels. I don't know. Maybe he didn't go to heaven. He wasn't a particularly nice guy. But the people he wasn't being nice to were not technically people, so maybe God gives him a pass. How do you judge that? Is it just like, well, there is wickedness in his soul, so he's still going to hell?
You're bringing religion into this, Brian. I don't know.
This is the newest thing. We're going to talk about religion on this podcast. How do you think our divine creator judges the characters of this movie?
Well, he's playing God, so he deserves to die.
That was my other thing, how he twists the quote. Because, you know, it's like, you know, if you created an AI, that's not the history of men, that's the history of gods. And I'm like, that's kind of an on-the-nose line. And then Oscar Isaac is like, I was thinking about what you said last night about me being a god. And I was just like, oh, you rapscallion. Oh, man.
That made me think of Watchmen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not talk about Watchmen, though.
I'm fine with not talking about Watchmen. So, we've been talking for an hour. We should probably wrap it up. Any final thoughts on this, gentleman, lady?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of intelligent films coming out about technology. And I'm happy to say that this is definitely one of the best in that crop, I think. I really enjoyed it. It's definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, this was like distributed by A24.
Love A24.
Right.
This but is it's another interesting chance for me to beg for a job.
Yeah.
I love A24. Guys, Locke loved it.
Right.
Enemy,
right.
Loved it.
It's just
Spring
interesting
Breakers,
though, because
loved it.
Jesus Christ. This movie has done, like, I think really well so far. Commercially, like, it's looking good, but I was reminded this week that, like, a lot of A24's other films just, like, haven't made that much money. Like, Enemy didn't make money, Locke didn't, Rover didn't.
Rover
did
loved
under,
it.
Did Under the Skin not make?
Not really.
A24, Under the Skin, loved it.
Yeah, Ryan. it's just from that perspective, it's good news for them that it's not just a critical hit, but it seems to be grossing pretty well.
Yeah. Is this another one of those things like Megan Ellison, who's just like, fuck it, I got money, I'll put out all these things?
I don't know.
Because like
they, it's bankrolled by...
They're just great.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting. A lot of the crew on this movie came from 28 Days Later. Mm. 28 Days Later. It seems like... He must, Garland must work with these people pretty regularly.
Well, yeah, because he worked with Domhnall Gleeson on Dread, like I said. And then, he's got his friends. I mean, Danny Boyle's done like two or three films with him or from him.
Yeah.
The Beach.
He's a really, I really think his background as a writer, you know, it's one of those things like whenever I hear a writer... like transferring into a directing role, I'm kind of like a little skeptical, and I think he did an amazing job.
Yeah, no, I like it. I'm excited to see what he does next.
All right,
that's it then, I guess. Let's briefly go over what's coming to Blu-ray, and then we can get out of here. So new to Blu-ray, we have Inherent Vice coming out on Tuesday. We saw this. We talked about it. I think I need to look at it again. I didn't really like it that much when I saw it, but I think it could have grown on me, or maybe watching it again, knowing what it wants to be and not putting my own stamp on it, would make it better.
I thought I was going to walk out on it the first 15 minutes.
Wow.
And it was like I was being submerged in warm water. I eventually just resigned myself to that film.
It's like freezing to death. That sounds great.
After the first 15 minutes, I was like, I am going to hate this shit. And then suddenly I just found myself just sort of easing into it. It was weird. I've never had that experience before.
It is sort of a movie you kind of just get like lost in.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of liked it, but yeah. It took me 2 viewings.
Yeah, hence why I'm saying I think I need to give it another
one. Yeah.
Also coming out, and I'm happy about this, is Paddington.
Okay.
I did not get a chance to see Paddington in theaters, and I love Paddington Bear. When I went home over Easter, actually, I saw the Paddington stuffed animal that I had when I was a kid. And I'm excited to watch Paddington.
Brian, you're just a child at heart.
I am. I mean, let's be real about it. I'm a big, cynical, alcoholic child. Speaking of which, The Gambler, starring Mark Wahlberg, is coming out as well.
Oh, God.
We also have The Wedding Ringer with Kevin Hart and Josh Gad. So...
There's a couple good older titles. One of them is The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which is based on the same author's work as Killing Him Softly.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that.
Yeah, Robert Mitchum is really great in that. And then also this movie called Miami Blues, which I saw recently in a series on like Sunshine Noir. It's set in Florida, I think. But it has a totally deranged lead performance by Alec Baldwin that it's the director's George Armitage, who is he's maybe more known for like Gross Point Blank, but this movie is like really really great.
I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, Baldwin is just insane.
Spaceballs also coming out. what
is that on Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Wow.
Boy Next Door. This one actually does have a definite article. The Boy Next Door. The Jennifer Lopez erotic thriller that came out earlier this year.
I got it. Oh, which is contributing to the whole first edition trend.
Oh, my God.
Which apparently is also an Age of Adeline.
The Odyssey. First edition.
First edition. It's a scroll.
Epic poem that was probably spoken for hundreds of years before it was ever written down. Oh, God.
Oh, I want to know what I saw.
Literally the only thing I know about that movie.
I kind of want to watch it because Jennifer Lopez apparently bankrolled that entire production.
Really?
Yeah, I guess she paid for, like, no one wanted to do it. And she's like, whatever, I'm just going to pay for it myself. I guess she did her own hair and makeup. I kind of want to see it for that reason.
That's a very independent spirit. We should reward that.
Bless her heart.
We should buy her a first edition copy of the Iliad.
Hey. I love J-Lo.
Oh, God. All right.
Should we do a quick mention of Ray Liotta's 1800 commercials?
Oh, we never got around. The weird commercials are disguised as drunken interviews with Ray Liotta.
How stunning.
I didn't even know what was happening for the entirety of that commercial. Because it appears, it has the feeling of, this is a story intercut with Ray Liotta. But it really is, he's just wasted.
He's exactly
the type of conversation you have with your friend who's like, man, I want to tell you, but you don't listen. I love you. Tomorrow 1800. Morning. Look,
so
what I need
like
to say is bears have strength, but butterflies are put on crowns. And then your friend would turn to the bartender and be like, 1800 tequila.
And what that's, is so,
that's what that is, fucking commercial.
What is so great about it is I feel like it fits into this new thing with commercials where these products that probably don't have the biggest advertising budget will bring in these super washed up celebrities. And e-cigs have done that with Stephen Dorff.
Oh, yeah.
McCarthy. Those are equally amazing. Yeah.
Oh,
but at
my
least
God.
Those, like, he's like, let's take back smoking. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I get that.
At least that is a coherent structure.
Yeah.
Thanks, shirtless Stephen Dorff.
It's not Ray Liotta being all gargoyles
business.
Fear the moonlight, just like werewolves fear the sun.
You guys, I know this is going to sound weird for a podcast, but the toughest ones are the people that say the least.
And
wow.
He has so many things like that. He's like, if you are strong enough to not have when he laughs, then you're not strong at all.
It's really about his view, like what he thinks is toughness.
It really feels like Ray Liotta's drunk and like lecturing the cameraman.
I want an interview that confirms that these weren't scripted.
Incoherent blathering.
That was just a parenthetical for the entire thing. And like he's at a boxing match and there's like a woman there,
she just looks at him and starts touching herself. She's like, this man.
Oh, Ray Liotta.
There's the old bartender who like pours him a drink and then Ray Liotta slides it over to them and they laugh because they're buddies.
Because they're tough.
That woman, when I see a man with just the deepest pockmarks in cinema walking into my boxing match that
with
I get
1800.
That is also like the scariest, like most underground boxing match.
Yeah.
Oh, what is going on? I was like, are they really at a cockfight? Is that really?
Guys, I'm gonna be honest. Like these commercials are like really silly, but this week, like a friend and I bought a thing of 1800, so like it worked. Like I feel like I have to give some credit to like whoever made this commercial.
You're like me. You're a very vulnerable consumer.
Oh, absolutely. Because I feel like I want like Ray's respect. Like
you just want him to be like, hey.
1800, didn't they have the guy from... They used to have the guy from The Sopranos.
Yeah, he has a few. These are shorter.
But his were... Yeah, and his made sense.
His definitely made sense.
They talked about how you could like use the top of the 1800 bottle to pour a shot.
Yeah.
Which is a very good selling point.
Oh, yeah. I've done that. I have made people drinks at parties just to show them that.
The 1800?
Yeah. They're like, I want a tequila, and we'll have like 1800 or Cuervo, and I'll like, oh, we have to use the 1800 so I can show you this shot pouring thing it does.
We'll start crediting Ray and stop taking all the credit.
Yeah, now every time someone's like, oh, I'll have some tequila, I'll be like, if you aren't strong enough to smile, then you don't have real strength.
Just him talking about, it's like this crazy interview about his career and how...
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, what?
And then he actually says at one point, he's like, if something is good, like 1800, you don't have to say much.
When was... This is the man, and now he's in Texas Rising.
Yeah. You think he'll drink a lot of tequila?
Which, by the way, this podcast brought to you by the History Channel miniseries, Texas Rising.
As well as 1800 tequila.
What a masterwork.
Fucking amazing. Just goddamn incredible.
He's an actor, man. He's just an actor in the business, and the business is rough.
He loves the films, though. Loves making pretend.
I didn't really want to go into acting. I was in a play one time.
Oh, do you remember the line? So much. He's like, you can't play pretend anymore, then you're already dead. 1800 tequila.
Enough said.
Enough said.
No, what were you gonna say, Danny?
There's the really weird anecdote about like researching with the doctor, and then he's like, I touched this woman's heart.
Yes. When did he play a doctor?
I don't know. He said it was like one of his first things, and he's like, I was researching it, I touched a woman's heart. And 1800.
Nothing.
1800 tequila.
And it doesn't transition into anything. It's just like, I touched a woman's heart.
Yeah,
I know. This profound what?
So good.
Well, you know, you touch a heart, you touch a soul. 1800 tequila.
Enough said.
Enough said.
Brilliant.
I cannot wait to baffle my friends at work when I just start saying inane shit to them, and then I just say 1800 tequila and then leave.
Oh my god. Thank you for bringing those to our attention, Danny.
Oh, absolutely.
We really should have talked about this first. Everyone, every person who listened, if anyone is still listening to this podcast.
No.
A,
we have.
B, I really wish that we'd start off with just this, just so that people be like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
I feel like it's appropriate to end these podcasts with the most inane shit, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is what we did with Air Bud.
Oh, God. So next week we'll be talking about the Avengers, Wait, is it the Avengers or Avengers? This is a real question.
We're not going to tell you, Brian.
It's Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron, right? It's not the Age of Ultron. I hate my life. It is just Avengers. But I have a reason, because the first movie was called The Avengers. This movie is just Avengers Age of Ultron. Okay.
It's going to be like Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
All over again.
One of the movies, like the fifth one, is just going to be called Avenge This. So anyway, next week Avengers, we'll be talking about Avengers Age of Ultron. So there's that. Look forward to that. I'm going to see if maybe my friend Dan, who spoke to us about a couple weeks ago, will come back, because he actually went to... He's a huge nerd. He'll say this about himself. He loves comics. He knows all of this shit. And he went to the El Capitan Theater and he watched every Marvel film in a row.
Oh my God. Wow.
And it all culminated with Age of Ultron. So maybe we'll try to have him on. So, you know, the nerds who listen to this, I say that word lovingly, P.S., will have a defender. Maybe. I don't know. So Avengers Age of Ultron, look for that next week. In the meantime, where can we be found on the internet? I'm glad you asked, Danny.
Thank you for asking, Brian.
God damn it.
Filmstage.com, Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin, and Blue Book search engine.
All right, Amanda Waltz.
I am on Twitter at MediaWaltz, and you can also read my blog about Pittsburgh film culture at WordPress, Steel Cinema, and that's about it.
All right, and you can find me on my personal site, dearfilm.net, where I do have a review of Ex Machina. I'm pretty sure it's basically what I've said already, but it ends with a really cool analogy, so you should at least go read that final part. You can also find me on thefilmstage.com, as well as Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRowan. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for bearing with us. 1800 Tequila.